Well, welcome to Good Friday at Severn and the kickoff of our Easter weekend right here at 20 Gambrels Road. We're really excited to have you in the house with us. But a little disclosure, this is going to be a somber experience as we reflect on what Jesus did on our behalf so that we could have access to something that we absolutely have been craving for all of our lives. And so we're going to walk through tonight Jesus' final message to the world. And up to this point in Jesus' life, he had delivered countless messages to thousands of people. In fact, every time Jesus spoke, entire towns, entire villages, groups of people would storm the streets and lean in. They'd be on the edge of their seats just to hear what Jesus had to say next. And he wasn't just getting the attention of religious people. He was getting the attention of everybody. Drug addicts, derelicts, prostitutes, white collar, blue collar, people on welfare, people living in the margins of society, people living at the center of society, kings, queens, and the like. Jesus was getting everyone's attention. He attracted people from every race, every religion, every people group on the planet, rich, poor, elite. It didn't matter where you came from or what you had done. Jesus was attracting everybody. And the thing about Jesus was he loved spending time with people that weren't like him, and people that weren't like him loved spending time with Jesus. He was magnetic, but he was also controversial. And so over the course of the delivery of those messages, people grew to either love or hate Jesus. And here's why. Here's why I believe that this they simply loved or hated him because of this. Jesus was coming to set the record straight about who God was and who God loved and who God was after and how people like you and I could gain access to God. And in a simple sense, Jesus was saying to the crowds at large, God is not who you think he is. He's not what you've been told. He's markedly different. And this irritated people who grew up in church. This irritated religious people. This irritated people who thought they had familiarity with who God was. And this caught the attention of people who thought God was a fairy tale, or people who thought they were too far gone to ever have a relationship with God. But all of a sudden, it seemed like the sensation about Jesus was turning to humiliation, because at this juncture in the story, things for Jesus, it appears that they've spun entirely out of control, and all the heat that had been aimed at Jesus is now dialed all the way up, and the sensation has now turned into a spectacle. And it looks like hope is turning into humiliation. It looks as if the dream is dying as Jesus hangs, hands and feet nailed to a Roman cross. And just like every other time that Jesus made a public appearance, crowds gathered. The streets were packed. People showed out, only this time not to hear Jesus' proclamation, but to bear witness to Jesus' punishment. The mob was loud, it was vulgar, it was obnoxious. People scoffed at Jesus, people hurled insults at Jesus, people spit on Jesus. The street sides were lined, the hillsides were lined, the walls of Jerusalem were lined with people who weren't there just to watch Jesus die. They were there to watch Jesus be completely destroyed. This would have been an eye-level experience. This would have been a face-to-face type of experience. Jesus' feet were only 6 to 7 inches off the ground, giving people open access to him as he hung there, helplessly nailed to that 80-pound Roman crossbar. It was painful. It was agonizing. It was absolutely humiliating. You see, Rome didn't invent crucifixion, but Rome did indeed perfect it. And sometimes they use nails, and sometimes they use rope, and sometimes they made it quick, and sometimes their victims would hang for hours on end in the streets, suffering for days before they died. But every time, regardless of how they executed it, every time the message was clear that no one made it out alive. And that day, you had Jesus on a cross that stood center with a thief to his left and another to his right. And if you pick up with me in Luke's gospel account, I'm in chapter 23, verse 32, and we read there that two other criminals were also led away to be executed with him. When they arrived at the place called the Skull, they crucified him there along with the criminals, one on the right and one on the left. And these two criminals are there that day getting exactly what they deserved. Their lives had hit rock bottom, spun completely out of control. There was no turning back. It was only a matter of hours before their lifeless body would be removed from those crosses and taken to the outskirts of Jerusalem and deposited in the city dump. There would be no mourners. Their families would not have access to their bodies. There would be no graveside service. None of that. Absolute humiliation is what they were bound to endure that day. There would be no defense, no second chance. Their only value to society in that experience was to become an illustration of what happens when you go toe-to-toe with Rome. And there they hung, 12 feet from Jesus, who seems to be suffering the same fate. Surrounded by their accusers, people who were there that day just to see them get exactly what society declared that they deserved. And this is the backdrop. This is the backdrop to Jesus' final message. Amidst the chaos and the violence and the insults and the abuse and the hatred and the rejection and the humiliation, Jesus is going to deliver his final message. And he's going to say something that no one else had ever dared say from that cross, because Jesus was there to do something that no one else could do on that cross. Because here's the reality of what Jesus' death accomplishes for us. Jesus' death absolutely changes our destiny. Listen to what he says in verse 34. Jesus says this. He says, "Father, forgive them." And while he and the men to his left and right are dying, Jesus is praying for his accusers. He's not praying that the chaos would stop, or that his circumstances would change, or that the crucifixion would end. He's praying for the rulers who were sneering at him, and the people who had been waiting for this moment where they felt like they had Jesus trapped and they were going to silence him forever. He's praying for the crowd who was mocking him and abusing him and cheering as he hangs there dying. He's praying for the guards who cast lots and divided his clothes and made an absolute fool of him. He's praying for the mob directing all of their hatred at Jesus, all of their anger, all of their violence. And we hear Jesus say, "Forgive them. Father, forgive them." And after this, one of the criminals hanging there begins to yell directly at Jesus, insulting Jesus. And he says, "Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us." All of a sudden, the criminal to Jesus' left is hurling all of his hatred at Jesus. He's blaming Jesus, and he's telling Jesus point blank, there's nothing you can do about it. And in fact, if you are who you said you were, this wouldn't even be happening to us. But the other criminal interrupts the one to his right, and he says, "Don't you even fear God, since you're undergoing the same punishment? We are punished justly because we're getting back what we deserve for the things we did. But this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said, "Jesus, when you come into your kingdom, remember me." I want you to hear what Jesus says to the criminal 12 feet to his right. The criminal who has absolutely nothing to offer. The criminal who's only there because of how broken he is. because of how strung out and wrung out he is. Because of the situation that he's gotten himself into from trying all the things that he tried and it just simply didn't work. The criminal who's getting exactly what he deserves. When he says, Jesus, remember me, you've got to understand this isn't a, Jesus, if you get me out of this, I'll turn things around. I'll go from faithless to faithful. I'll start doing life different. This man has absolutely nothing to offer. He's stuck. There's no time for a turnaround. Time has ticked off the clock. There's no time to prove anything. There's no time to make a point. He's literally coming to Jesus just as he is, broken, guilty, ashamed. And listen to what Jesus says to him. And I believe that this is just a crystal clear picture of grace that people like us have got to rest our lives in. I need you to hear what Jesus says to him. Jesus' response to him shows us that it's never too late and you're never too far gone. I need you to hear that Jesus can be trusted in spite of your circumstance, in spite of what you feel like you're up against, in spite of what you've experienced, in spite of your past. I need you to see that in Jesus, you can find what all of your life you've been looking for. I need you to see that in Jesus, you can approach God as you are, all the mistakes, all the pain, all the shame, all the insecurity, all the doubt, all the anxiety, all the disbelief. This is what Jesus is saying to people like us, people who need grace, people who have nothing to offer, people who are courageous enough to admit that we can't save ourselves. Jesus says, today you will be with me in paradise. Today your new life can begin. Today the striving can cease. Today you are no longer defined by your life sentence. Today your past is no longer has power over you. Today you're no longer a victim. Today the stereotype can be silenced. Today you can let go of the lies. Today the old you can die so that the new you can start living. Because on the cross, Jesus is simply giving his life so that you can have a life that you haven't even begun to imagine. Look, if Jesus, if he does what the criminal to the left is prompting him to do when he gets down from that cross, if Jesus gets down from that cross, we never get out of our death sentence. If Jesus doesn't die, our destiny is death. This is why Jesus is on that cross. He's taking torment so that you and I can have transformation. He's allowing himself to be trapped so that you and I can be set free. In Jesus, dead ends can become doorways. And in Jesus, discomfort can unlock our destiny because Jesus' death changes our destiny. And if you're sitting there thinking that it's all on you and you have to turn things around and clean things up and fix everything that's broken in your life so that you can come to Jesus, stop. It's not that complicated. When Jesus says, today you will be with me in paradise, Jesus is giving us what we don't deserve. He's giving us what we haven't earned. It's an invitation to come to Jesus as you are, not as you think you have to be or anyone has told you have to be. It's an invitation to people who are cold-hearted and hot-headed, people who don't know what they're doing, people who got themselves into something that they can't get themselves out of, people who are out of control, people who feel like they're getting what they deserve and they don't know what to do about it. Look, through the cross, Jesus is saying, I will take everything, absolutely everything that you deserve. I'll take it all. I'll take the destiny that you deserve so that you can have one that you don't deserve. Jesus' death changes our destiny, and you don't have to wait. You don't have to wait until you get your act together or people approve of where you're at. or everything feels right, or everything feels okay. Look, today could be the day for you. Today you could make a decision to trust Jesus, and the weight can be lifted, the chains can be absolutely broken. And that's what we see in the thief's life. And all it takes is the courage to admit that you can't do it on your own. You can't save yourself. That you've made mistakes and you have regrets. And you are ashamed and you do feel guilty. That your sin is the reason that Jesus is hanging on that Roman cross. Look, when the thief says we're punished justly because we're getting exactly what we deserve, this isn't a last attempt to try to squeak into heaven. This is brutal honesty. When he says this man, in reference to Jesus, has done nothing wrong, he's not trying to appeal to Jesus to make Jesus feel good. They're suffering the same fate. Jesus is trapped just like he is. But in Jesus being trapped, God is proving to us that he loves us too much to let us go, and that while we were still sinners, while we were stuck, while we were running the other way, Jesus died for us. We see the one who knew no sin becoming sin so that we could become the righteousness of God. We see Jesus giving us what we don't deserve. Look, when the thief says, Jesus, remember me, when you come into your kingdom, you have to remember. He's not saying this to the resurrected Jesus. He's not even saying this to a Jesus that's just standing there watching that day. He's saying this to a beat up, bloodied, tattered, bruised, humiliated, defenseless, dying Jesus. He's speaking to a Jesus who's nailed to a cross just 12 feet away from where he is. And he's not saying, Jesus, change my circumstances. He's asking Jesus to change his destiny. The moment Jesus says, today you will be with me in paradise, the thief's destiny changes completely. His circumstances didn't change. He still suffered the same fate, but the power of his circumstances that had completely paralyzed him were no more. The chains had been absolutely broken and he had been set free. It looks like he's dying, but he's just beginning to live, because death in that moment is now powerless over him. The grave can't hold him. He's not going to get what he knows he deserves, because Jesus has completely changed his destiny and he's giving him something that he doesn't deserve, because Jesus' death changes our destiny. But here's one thing that the thief and I don't have in common. The thief that day suffered the fate of death and then was in paradise. I'm not in paradise right now. The moment I trusted Jesus, I didn't, you know, catapult to paradise or transport to paradise. I'm here in the middle. I'm here right now, today. And I need Jesus to show up in the middle. I need Jesus to show up in the middle of my disappointment, in the middle of my disillusionment, in the middle of my doubt, in the middle of my fear, in the middle of my mistakes. And I'm here to tell you that just like he showed up in the middle for that thief on the cross, he will meet you right in the middle of whatever you're going through. Because here's what I know about following Jesus. It doesn't mean that your life is going to be sanitized and safe and problem-free and that your circumstances are going to immediately change. Following Jesus means this, that when life is beating you down and people are tearing you apart, you can know without a shadow of a doubt that Jesus is right in the middle with you. He's with you when you're settled. He's with you when you're anxious. He's with you when you feel blessed. He's with you when you feel broken. He's with you when you're in the palace. He's with you when you feel like you're in the pit. And like the thief on the cross, yes, we are going to be with him in paradise, but I need him to be with me in the middle right now. Because the same grace that got me to where I am convinced that it's going to get me to where I'm going. And it's going to allow me to push through the pains in my life and allow me to find purpose right here, right now, in the middle, because Jesus is in the middle. And to see this, sometimes you've got to look back. You've got to look back so that you can see how far Jesus has already brought you. And here's what trusting Jesus means. It means that I'm not who I am, but it also means that I'm not where I want to be either. So when you look back, you'll see that you're not who you are. But when you look forward, sometimes you feel like you're never going to become what you need to be. Like you haven't gone anywhere. And if this is where you are, if you feel like you're stuck somewhere in the middle, maybe this is right where God needs you to be. Maybe this is right where God wants you. Because look, you needed grace then, and I'm here to tell you that you need it right now. And you're going to need it tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day and all the other days after that. Because I know this about grace. The same grace that got me to where I am today is the same grace that's going to get me to where I'm going tomorrow. And Jesus is saying to everyone, like that thief in the cross, everyone who is caught in the middle of something right now, in the middle of change, in the middle of pain, in the middle of a diagnosis, in the middle of a situation, in the middle of a disappointment, in the middle of a layoff, in the middle of a storm, in the middle of the fire, Jesus is saying this: I am with you. Follow me through the middle. I'm with you in the storm. I'm with you in the fire. I've carried you this far, and I will carry you even further. The same grace that did it then will do it again. He who began a good work in you is going to be faithful to complete it. So if you're still in the middle and there's still unresolved conflict in your life, if there's still pain, if there's still a struggle, if there's still something in your life that you just can't shake, something that you can't get over, hear me on this. Your dream is not over. It's not dead. Your purpose is not finished. It's not the end. It's just the middle. Hang in there. Keep following. Keep moving. Keep trusting. Because here's what I know. You and I have an advantage that the thief on the cross didn't have. We have an advantage that the guards didn't have. We have an advantage that the religious rulers didn't have. We have an advantage that the angry mob didn't have. And here's the advantage. Here's the advantage. We know how this story ends. We know that the cross isn't the end. We know that the tomb is empty. We know that hope is alive. We know without a shadow of a doubt that the devil is a liar, that no one is too far gone, and hope is alive and well. So whatever you're in the middle of, please take a look at that cross. Whatever you're in the middle of, take a look at that cross. Because on that cross, we see that Jesus' death changes our destiny. Because here's what Jesus' death did. It opened a doorway to God. Listen to Luke 23, verse 44. It was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3, because the sun's light failed. The curtain of the sanctuary was split down the middle. And Jesus called out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I entrust my spirit." Saying this, he breathed his last. Do you see what's happening here? Can you see it? Can you sense it? Look, this is a picture of what Jesus' death accomplishes. Jesus' death changes our destiny because it opens a doorway to God. And the curtain that we read splits from top down. The curtain that separated the temple from people, that was the place that was called the Holy of Holies. This line of demarcation between people like us and a holy and righteous God. It splits completely down the middle, from the top all the way down to the bottom. Do you hear this? Do you see what this is? This is what separated the world from God. This was an illustration of the separation, the gap between people like us and a holy and righteous God. And I need you to see this, that the curtain was ripped, not from the bottom up. We didn't rip the curtain open. It wasn't us on the bottom ripping our way to the top. It tore from top down. And here's what that means. It means that through Jesus' death, anyone, absolutely anyone, can have access to a relationship with God. And in that moment, everything that separated people like us from God was being dealt with fully and completely and entirely through the death of Jesus. Jesus' death changes our destiny because Jesus' death opens a doorway to God that anyone can walk through. This doorway is open wide. It's open wide to people like us. And here's the thing about the doorway. Here's how accepting it is. And here's how wide open it is. Everybody gets through it the same way. There's not a way around. There's not a work around. There's not a group of people that get in another way. Everyone gets in the same way, and that same way is through the death and resurrection of Jesus. Come on, somebody. Look, Jesus' death is a picture of how God is so willing to meet us amidst our chaos, amidst our doubt, amidst our trouble, amidst our anxiety. And Jesus freely put himself in the middle of our mess. And the cross is where everything that separated people from God was being taken care of once and for all. Look, if you're looking for the grace of God, look at that cross in the middle, the one between those two thieves. Look, the cross is where Jesus absolutely proves his love for us. The cross is where Jesus shows us that he is for us. The cross is where Jesus shows us that he is capable of helping people like us, people who struggle with sin, people who don't feel good enough, people who have doubts, people who have been rejected, people who have been hurt, people who are paralyzed by a past that they can't get over, people who feel isolated, people who feel like they're wrestling with addictions and suicide and doubt and all the like. People who know deep down that, like the thief, we can't get ourselves out of what we've gotten ourselves into. And maybe you're struggling with something right now in the season of life that you're in. And maybe you're the only one that knows about it. And maybe you're the only one that knows because you're so terrified about what people are going to say or what judgment they're going to pass or what they're going to accuse you of or condemn you for. Look, Jesus wants to meet you right where you are today. Maybe you're depressed, or maybe you're anxious. Maybe you're suicidal. Maybe that's where you're at in the season that you're in. Maybe your faith has for some reason dwindled to doubt. Maybe somewhere along the way, you feel like you've just lost your way. Jesus is not telling you to wait and to come back when you've resolved all the issues or you've tied up all the loose ends. Jesus wants to meet you in the middle of your struggle, in the middle of your pain, in the middle of your depression, in the middle of your anxiety. When we see Jesus hanging between two thieves, we see a Jesus who was absolutely for people like us. We see a Jesus who loves people like us, just as we are. People caught up in things that we can't get out of. People who find themselves nailed to the proverbial crosses in our own lives. We see a Jesus who's right there in the middle, pressing into us, dying to change our destiny, to open a doorway to God. And that doorway is wide open. You could walk through it today. And so I'm going to ask you, if you feel like you've never trusted Jesus, I'm going to ask you to do something courageous. Or if you feel like there was a time in your life where you did trust Jesus and you're just not there anymore, I'm going to ask you to do something courageous. I'm going to ask you to come up here during our last song and talk to somebody about it. Maybe this will be the first time that you've talked with somebody about it. But I want you to do something courageous and consider talking with someone about it. Consider praying with someone about it, because I am convinced that Jesus will meet you right where you are. If you take that step, Jesus will meet you there. And he'll show you something that you need to see. And he'll give you something that you've always been after. When I said that the doorway to God is wide open, it's wide open. And it's wide open to everyone, and everyone gets in the same way. What I mean there is, the only thing standing between you and a relationship with God at this point is you. Because Jesus has pulled out all the stops. He's declared his love for you. He's declared his care for you. He's shown you that he's not here to beat you up or set you up or set you off to the side. He's here to care for you and to love you. So as we close out our Good Friday service, consider talking to someone on our response team about where you're at. Because you can walk through that doorway to God, and your destiny can be absolutely changed in an instant. Amen. Let's worship God together.